Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Punt Intended Podcast, a Dynasty Fantasy Basketball podcast and a Sports Ethos production. As always, I am your host, Mark C., the Dynasty leader over at Sports Ethos. You can find me at MacAttack145 on Twitter and my writings and rankings over at SportsEthos.com. And please, we would appreciate on whatever podcast platform you're listening to, please rate, review, subscribe, all those things help the growth of the podcast and will be much appreciated. And it's just a few simple clicks. So again, please rate, review, subscribe, like, all that would be much appreciated. But now let's dive into something a little more interesting. And of course, it's going to be more NBA draft talk. And before getting into some of the prospects today, we're going to just discuss some of the updates we've seen in the past couple weeks. And the first player we're going to discuss in terms of updates is Nikola Topic. It came out that his knee injury he suffered about a month ago was actually a partially torn ACL, which, I mean, you hear ACL, you hear partially torn, it's never great things you want to hear. And obviously I'm thanking him a little bit because you'll lose some of that rookie year production, but really this isn't going to affect him much in the long run. We've seen plenty of athletes recover from an ACL injury and play perfectly fine the rest of their career. And for me, he's still one of the better, if not the best rookie prospect for Dynasty in this draft. So yes, does it worry me a little bit about that partially torn ACL? Of course, it has to some. But it really, to me, doesn't change his Dynasty outlook all that much. I think he'll recover fine, and ultimately I'm not too concerned unless we hear reports about the surgery or the rehab being a little more complicated. Now, what may be a little more worrying is the height and wingspan measurements. So, you know, initially, throughout the past year, you've seen reports of the wingspan maybe being 7 feet. But with the International Combine being over the past couple weeks or so, his height and wingspan were actually reported to be 6'7 and 6'5.5. And just so you know, I'm not getting those numbers confused. He actually has a negative wingspan, meaning his wingspan is actually shorter than his height. Now, measurements do matter, obviously. You like player to have a long wingspan, just enables them to take up more space on the court, maybe get that extra extension for layups or finishes or what have you. But, I mean, if you just watch the tape of him, I mean, he didn't look like he was 7 foot. And I never evaluated him as a 7 foot wingspan prospect just because, okay, he just didn't look that massive on the court. He still looked pretty sizable and a pretty good size for a point guard or a lead guard, but I wasn't evaluating him as this huge monster or this huge lengthy player. And yeah, it's not great that his measurements came in probably under what a lot of us were thinking. But it's something where I look at the tape and I say, well, he still plays decently big. Obviously, in a different league, in the Adriatic League, you're not maybe seeing as much NBA size or NBA athletes. But he doesn't really play small. He still plays pretty big and uses his body well. And for me, that's the more important point, is how you play with the tools you have at your disposal. And I still think he plays relatively big, can still finish inside really well. And it's not really reliant on his length. So I'm actually not even that concerned about these measurements, because that's how I was evaluating him on the tape anyways, not necessarily as someone who's going to come in the league and be able to excel with his length. And then tying that into another topic I wanted to discuss was NBA Draft Combine and the drills and all the agility drills, standing reach, height, wingspan, and all these measurements. And, you know, like for the shooting drills, it's great if someone can shoot really well in that scenario. I mean, Stephon Castle, I think, raised a couple eyebrows shooting as well as he did in the shooting drill. But there is a huge difference from shooting in an open gym in a controlled environment and taking your time on these shots, you know, taking a good, even couple seconds to load up and just focus on hitting these shots, versus doing it in an in-game situation where you're on the move, someone's flying at you, you're going to have maybe less than a second or two to decide if you're taking that shot. It's really night and day. There's a difference between practice and the game, as Allen Iverson might say. So, yeah, I mean, I would rather a player like Stephon Castle hit those shots in the drills than not. But it's a 25-shot sample in a completely different environment than the game. Again, I care more about the tape and what they showed in-game more than a drill. And If we're talking about just Stephon Castle, I mean, there are other factors that may have impacted his shooting throughout his season at UConn, but he definitely didn't show someone who was necessarily all that confident in his shot, especially with the volume of shots that he put up. Someone like Zach Edey, who displayed good lateral testing numbers, I mean, sure, nice, but I mean, I didn't see that in his tape too much. We'll get to Zach Edey in a couple weeks here, but I mean, I'm not really seeing someone who is good laterally in space. That's just not in his tape at all, I think. So, with a lot of these drills and numbers, I mean, do I care about them a little bit? But they're not influencing my rookie rankings at all, or really my evaluations of these players. I just said I care about them a little bit. Honestly, I don't even care about them that much. It's more just nice Twitter talk and nice general talk out there, but I really don't think it matters too much at the end of the day. We've seen plenty of players who have not done well in these shooting drills and shoot well in the pros, and we've seen vice versa. Players who do well at the combine who don't perform at the pros. For me, it's more important what do you do in actual game state scenarios and situations. So, again, go to the tape. The tape's going to show you more than any of these drills are going to show you at the combine, and I frankly would not really care about, not care too much about what these combine measurements or drill results were. Again, going with that thought, we're getting into some early NBA draft smokescreen. There's been reporting lately, Ron Holland's going to land outside the lottery. Zach Edey's range is 9 through 19. Devin Carter has a lottery promise. As we get into the drafts and the weeks leading up to it, there's going to be so much smokescreen and so many different angles for these reporters, these companies, for teams to get information out there, especially in how fluid this draft class is and how much of a lack of consensus there are. There's going to be teams jostling for positions, feeding different information to these insiders. And we have to keep that in mind that there's sometimes some bias in the reporting that gets out there. That being said, I mean, landing spots and value on a player does matter somewhat to me. Taking a player at 4 versus 8, for instance, shows a greater belief and usually more allowance a team will give a player and a longer leash. Someone like Benedict Mathurin, who the Pacers took at 6, I don't necessarily have the greatest belief in him. But because he was drafted 6, I do believe the Pacers are going to give him a longer leash to see what he has versus, other players who were taken outside the lottery. So, like someone like Jalen Hood-Schifino on the Lakers. He had a bit of an injured, riddled first season, and their team was in a bit of a different state. But, I mean, the Lakers probably won't feel pressure to play him or see what he has due to the stacked draft capital invested. But again, this is something that doesn't shift my rookie rankings too much. I tend to more grade the talent rather than just the short-term impact. So somewhat describe with Topic above a little bit how no matter where he lands, I'm still going to probably have him one of the highest graded rookies in this draft class. Using someone like Isaiah Collier, someone who I like a lot, IRL, maybe not as much for fantasy, but I still like him for fantasy as well. If he gets drafted at, say, the Spurs at 8 or the Jazz at 10, okay, I know that that team believes in him a lot more because right now that's, I think, a little above his consensus, what we've seen out there. So that just shows me that a team does believe in him. And I do think he'll get a lot of leash. If he goes more 15th to the Heat, for instance, okay, that shows a little less team investment. But again, I still believe in the talent. I'll still have Collier rated pretty nicely. So where a player lands isn't going to be one of my major factors. It's more going to be a shift in, I guess, a player's tier. Where they're going to land, rather than any massive teardrops or raises if a player gets drafted ahead. I'm grading more, again, I'll say this again, I'm grading more the talent, not necessarily the player and the immediate fit. In Dynasty, yeah, it's nice if a player has a very clear pathway to minutes, but usually talent's going to prove itself and talent is going to play. They'll force their way on the court if they are good enough. And especially at that upper end, if a player has that much talent that they're, say, a top 100 dynasty asset or top 50 and show themselves to be a strong player in the league, that talent is going to show through and NBA teams will recognize that. So, all this being said, I factor in these factors, I guess, a little bit, but I'm ultimately grading on the talent. And when I drop my rookie rankings right after or soon after the draft concludes, I'm going to be ranking more on the talent and a little bit on the landing spot, but it's going to be tiered towards that talent. Now, let's get into some of the prospects. Always fun, and we're going to discuss two kind of more spark plug scoring guards here today. The first is going to be Jared McCain, freshman out of Duke. Now, I say freshman, but he'll actually have a draft age of a little over 20 when he comes in the league, so he's a little bit on the older side. He's going to be one of these smaller guards, about 6'2", and a 6'3.5 wingspan, 205 pounds, so decent weight and heft at his size, but he's definitely on the shorter side, and he is primarily a guard. Let's talk about his passing a little bit first before we'll get into his shooting, which is his calling card. The shooting, that is, not the passing. The passing is definitely not going to be as good as you want it from a guard. I do think he has some flashes of quick, snappy passes, some good pocket passes in the pick and roll, but it was very infrequent on these actions. Passing was sometimes a bit of a last resort for him, even if the read was there initially, and his passes could sometimes be off target or misplaced a decent amount of times. Now, that was partially due to the number of one-handed or live dribble passes he did attempt, which are harder passes, but passing just wasn't his natural instinct. He had an assist percentage of 11%, which is pretty low for a guard. You know, normally you want to see that at least 20% if you're believing in a player who can pass and distribute the ball and help lead other players open. That was about 2.7 assists per 75 possessions, and that's a pretty low number. I mean, just not even for a guard, really. That's a pretty low number in general. And it's just not really a great aspect of this game. I did mention he had some reads in the pick and roll, but it was rather simplistic. It was mainly that pocket pass or the bounce pass to the roll man. He's not really hitting the cross corner, not really reading help coming to tag the roller or anything like that. And passing just not going to be a part of his game, honestly. In terms of his rim driving, I thought he was a decently willing driver at the rim, even if he wasn't super effective there. He had about a 23% free throw rate, which is okay, but it's not anything you're pointing to as outstanding or, hey, this is a player who's really going to help your free throw percentage a lot. Getting back into his handles a little bit, you know, he did only have a 10.1% turnover rate, which is really low for a guard, and it wasn't like he had poor usage. He had 21.2% usage, which it's pretty strong. That's a pretty strong turnover rate for his usage. And you know, talking about players in the NBA, I do like players who can have high usage and low turnover rate. But that was mainly because he was either shooting it and not really passing it too often. So good that his turnover rate is low, but it's not in a sense because he was passing the ball all that much or trying to even find passes all too often. In terms of his handles, I thought he just didn't get separation ability too often, although I thought he used his body well to shield defenders, which is a good aspect, but I'd rather see some of that more separation ability if we're talking about on-ball scoring juice. He was a little reliant on his step back to help create space, but it wasn't always super dynamic. Then again, he also did use it to great effectiveness, as we'll get into now with his shooting. And that really is Jared McCain's calling card, is his shooting. He squares himself really well in catch and shoots and has a really repeatable shot motion, which is great to see. I love, you know, I talked about shooting motions before, and I care a little bit if it looks, you know, traditional or clean, but what's more important is a comfortability in it and repeatability, and McCain has that in spades. He also has a fairly fluid release. I wouldn't say it's quick, but it's not slow at all, and it's perfectly acceptable. Should be able to speed that up a little bit at the NBA level to have that good release time that you like seeing. He also had a really good variation in his shot diet, in terms of three ball especially. He had some relocation, some catch and shoots, even some deeper ones at the college line, but they would be deep for the NBA as well. Had some no-dip threes. Maybe not as much movement shooting as you like to see on tape, but he also had some of those as well, and he made those. And I believe his movement shooting can be something that can easily be improved on, and just more players ran for that at the NBA level. Putting some numbers on his shooting, he averaged about 8.25 attempts per 75 possessions, and 3.5 makes per 75 possessions. That's good for 41.5% from deep. That's very nice percentage, very solid volume for a guard, and You love both those numbers in terms of a shooting and scouting perspective. I also thought he got great elevation on his shot, really rose up nicely, well from deep, but also had a little bit of a nice dribble pull-up in the mid-range. So being able to utilize that both in the mid-range, just being able to drive a little bit, rise up if he notices the defender isn't on him, but also do that from deep. You love seeing, again, that versatility in the shot and the different ways that he can shoot. I wouldn't say he's just a three-point shooter. I think he's just a shooter in general and rises up really nicely and a good scorer as well. Average about 20.2 points per 75 possessions. It's a decently strong number that we like seeing, especially considering he's not really at the rim too often. He's more of taking these threes or some of these mid-range attempts. So that's really the calling card of Jared McCain, is that shooting. And that's something that every team is looking for. Now, at his size, will he be able to get that shot up consistently? That's probably the biggest question for McCain. His smallest stature definitely hinders him when he's passing, rebounding, or opposition shooting over him. We'll talk about his defense in a bit here. And definitely a little bit of a concern of how that size translates to the NBA. I think, though, he gets enough rise and a good enough release point on his shot that I'm not super concerned about it, but he may just have to make sure he has that window space that's a bit larger at the NBA level than the college level. Let's talk about his rebounding, which I just talked about his size, and you might be asking, okay, we're talking about his rebounding now, really? Well, he actually was pretty willing to fight in there and get in there for rebounds, and actually had some good fundamentals in that regard. He had a 15.2% rebound rate. Again, that's really strong for his size. Average about 7 boards per 75 possessions. That is a pretty strong mark. I don't know if that will stay fully at the NBA level, but chipping in some rebounds is always helpful, and I think he'll at least fight for the boards, and teams definitely will notice that. Talking about his defense now, he is not one of these smaller guards who just kind of dies completely on defense and gives up. He actually fights and competes pretty well on defense. I mean, as I mentioned, he is 6'2", but he's 205 pounds, which is decently sized. And I think he fights and competes really well on that end of the court. I thought he has a good use of his hands below the shot release point, kind of reminiscent a little bit of Fred Van Vliet, how he gets those strips when players go up for shots. Not anything great, but a good use of hands, and at least pesters players when they go into their jumper. He had a 2% steal rate, though, which is nothing special. 1.5 steals per 75 possessions. That's not too bad. That's probably a little lower than we'd like, though, to think of Jared McCain as a steals contributor. Now, I did think he died when getting screened a little bit, which isn't too surprising, but it wasn't anything too horrible. It's just a little bit there on the tape. Usually, he was able to stay in front of his man pretty well on defense and stay relatively stout, although he was a little inconsistent there. Really, my biggest issue with him on defense is again just the lack of that wingspan being 6'3.5". And this is where earlier, when I was talking about how a player plays on tape versus the size measurements, McCain, I think, is a good example of that. Where a lot of times his opposition could shoot over him with pretty relative ease, and McCain just wasn't able to get a firm contest up and wasn't able to really alter the shot all too often. Compared to someone like Reed Sheppard, who we talked about a few weeks ago, even though they have similar measurements, Sheppard at least got in there and had a better contest rate, a better block percentage rate, and seemed to affect the shots more on tape. Jared McCain, on this instance, just did not seem to get as good of a contest up, which, I do think he fights well on defense for his size, but I have to include that caveat of for his size. I don't think he's going to be. It's hard to call him a positive defender. It's hard to do that at his size. I don't think he does enough in terms of the steals or blocks to be positive there, but I think how he generally fights, competes, has a good awareness on that end. He can probably be a part of a scheme with just his size being an inherent negative, but probably not like black hole negative. Or let's attack this player every down the court negative. I think he'll be a little above that baseline. So it's, I don't know whether to call that a positive for his size or just a meh in general. I'll probably go in the meh on defense in general. And especially for fantasy, he's not going to be an effect creator in that regard. So let's talk a summary of Jerod McCain here. Jerod McCain's clear calling card is a shooting. He displays the shooting versatility to be involved in numerous actions that are meant to either create his own shot, and even has some flashes of step back potential, which is great for that on-ball shooting juice. However, the rest of his offensive game isn't really developed though. His passing is more of a third nature, if anything, and he just doesn't have the passing juice to really either pass players open and be someone who you want running probably a lot of on-ball actions through primarily. Generally, Jerod McCain does compete well, but a smaller height and stature is always going to just be a limit to his game. I think he does fight for boards well. He tries on defense, but I can see NBA athletes punishing him a bit more than what he was in college, just due to greater size, better athleticism at that level. So I think Jerod McCain can slot into an NBA rotation to provide some spacing and some shooting, but I think the other limitations we have discussed will provide some real hurdles in lineup configurations and him being a long-term starter in the NBA. So for fantasy, what does this all mean? Given that I don't necessarily see a long-term starter here, that's just going to cap his minutes and his usage a little bit to probably just some of his core stats. That will mean he will be okay in points, but strong in threes, and threes is going to be his best fantasy category. I think he'll have a good free throw percentage, but limited volume, as we discussed earlier. He's not necessarily a player that breaks the paint and gets in there too often. He did shoot 89% from the line, a stellar mark and a great indicator for his three-point shooting being real, but only about 3.5 attempts per 75 possessions, which isn't, you know, terribly low, but it's not high enough to be a huge impact. I think he'll be pretty poor in assists for a guard. I just don't see him having that sort of on-ball role. And I think it's going to be hard to see him being great in field goal percentage. He shot 46% on the season from the field. And given that I think he's going to be primarily a three-point shooter at the NBA level, that's probably going to dip down a little bit as well. But most likely we'll see low turnovers. We mentioned a low turnover rate earlier, and without that usage, he can't hurt your turnovers too much. I think he'll chip in some boards and steals. I mentioned the rebounding earlier, and I mentioned maybe not a huge event creator in steals, but there'll be some here and there. Probably not a positive in steals. It's hard to see him being a positive in boards due to the lack of minutes, but he won't be too negative there. And his blocks, I think, are going to be pretty non-existent. We talked about his lack of contest earlier, and it wasn't even worth mentioning the stats. They were just so low in that regard. So Jerod McCain, I think, is a decent bet to see good rotation minutes eventually his NBA career, and maybe even earlier as just a spark plug shooter off the bench. But I think he's going to be limited overall in his ceiling, not just in the NBA, but for fantasy, with that more narrow skill set of basically being a three-point specialist. I think he can develop in time, a decent bet for minutes, but Jerod McCain is someone who I think there's going to be higher upside fantasy options, and it's probably going to be more of a mid-first-round pick for those reasons in rookie drafts. Next, let's discuss Carlton Bub Carrington. And he goes by Bub a lot. That's kind of his nickname. But I'm going to refer to him as Carlton Carrington here. And honestly, I knew he was a bit of a scorer-shooter type guard. And I hear the nickname Bub, and I thought of someone smaller. And that's on me for a lack of research ahead of time. He actually has pretty decent size. He's just under 6'4", with a wingspan of 6'8". 195 pounds. I mean, a little on the smaller side in terms of heft, but the wingspan and the height are pretty good for a lead guard, and he is more of a lead guard. He was a freshman out of Pittsburgh, and compared to Jerod McCain, who is more a older freshman, Carlton Carrington is going to be entering the draft under 19. He's one of the youngest players in this draft, which is really good in terms of just he has a lot of room to grow in terms of age development or age, you know, development curves. So let's get into some of the numbers and details on Carlton Carrington now. Carlton Carrington is a decent ball handler and a decent lead guard, especially considering his size and his age. He did have some snaking on the pick and roll and understanding of keeping defender on his hip or behind him, which is actually a really advanced thing to do at his age and just for any freshman in general. So I really like that aspect. I thought he had a decent spatial awareness of the court and generally knows where the pass should go. He had an assist percentage of 24%, which is really nice. It's a really good plus. About 5.5 assists per 75 possessions, which is all right, pretty solid. Also, only 13% turnover rate on 23% usage. Very nice as well. With that usage, his role as being one of the primary guard creators on this team, I love seeing that 13% turnover rate. Now, I will have to say, I thought his handle was a little loose at times. Had a lot of good intentions with them, but it needs to be tighter and more refined and developed. It did improve over the season as I watched later games of his. And again, considering he's so young, I think he is on a good pathway for improvement in that regard. Adding some notes on his passing, I thought he lacks kind of a passer's touch. And I don't know if he has high-end passing upside. He's not exactly passing guys open too great right now. His ball sometimes lacked good placement and was outside ideal pockets. Whether that means shooting pockets, you know, the pocket pass to a big man's hip when rolling. But again, he shows a lot of shades of trying to make that pass, those types of passes work, and I like seeing that from a young player. Talking more about his self-scoring now, I think this is going to be his calling card and why he's been a late riser in the draft. He has a very comfortable and clean pull-up, really gets good rise on it, gets up there, it's a good release point, and a good understanding of when defenders are far enough away, or really their momentum is shifting away from him, where he can rise up and get that shot off cleanly. And that adds some self-creation shot-making juice, which is really one of the best abilities to have in the game, and one of the rarest. He averaged about 18.7 points per 75 possessions, which is decently solid on his usage. You're combining a bit of that scoring with that playmaking element. And again, I love players who have that in his game. It wasn't just on his pull-up, I guess, talking about his pull-up jumper, it wasn't just in the mid-range. He also pulled up really well on it from deep, and I believe that will translate to the NBA very nicely. Now, his field goal percentage and his three-point percentage do look bad, but his shot diet was really tough. A lot of self-created stuff, as mentioned before, which are also some of the hardest shots in the NBA. But he shows such good form, good versatility on that shot, that I am a believer in improving. To put some numbers on that, he shot 41.2% from the field. You're hearing that and thinking, Mark, why are you saying Carlton Carrington can be good in this regard? Well, it's because Carlton Carrington shot 51.1% on his twos, which is a pretty strong metric. That's pretty strong from the two-point range. He shot 32.3% on threes, which isn't even that bad. That was on 8.25 threes attempted per game, 2.6 makes per 75 possessions. And I think something we have to keep in mind when looking at his field goal percentage is about 52.3% of his shots were from deep. So a majority of the shots for field from threes. Whenever that happens, that is going to drop your field goal percentage. But in terms of evaluating his mid-range game and his three ball, we kind of have to look at it as two separate statistics. Looking at just that field goal percentage is probably going to mar that evaluation a little bit. Now, from a fantasy perspective, obviously we care about field goal percentage, so I'll mention later how we have to think about that and how that's going to be affected. You know, we mentioned earlier how Carlton Carrington, I think, has really good self-creation scouting and flashes, which is a bit of a double-edged sword in fantasy. We see players like DeMar DeRozan or Brandon Ingram, who mainly have a shot diet of tough mid-range field goals, which they are good at making, but it does keep their field goal percentage down in the range where it's not great. It's not bad, but it's not great. So we may have that issue for fantasy with Carlton Carrington, even if I think he could be a very positive player in that regard on the court. In terms of his 3-point shooting, I didn't see a lot of movement shooting, but a good amount of catch and shoot, a good amount of off-hand up actions, and a good amount of pull-up threes were all there. So I think he can have good versatility in a shot and play some off-ball if needed. I will say his shot motion was inconsistent in terms of his balance and where his body was, but hey, if it goes in at a good enough rate, I can kind of ignore some of the shot mechanics a little bit. And I don't think it's anywhere at a point where it's a red flag or even an orange flag or yellow flag. Talking about his finishing at the rim, I thought that aspect was lackluster and holds him back from being, I guess for me, calling him a three-level scorer. And he wasn't really dynamic enough with the ball in terms of drawing the defense in or penetrating the paint. And I don't think he had too much finishing craft either. I do question how much he will bend the court to him and warp the court to him. And that may keep him from the higher levels. So again, drawing comparisons to Brandon Ingram, DeMar DeRozan, who don't necessarily stress the defense in that way. They stress it more if they're shot making. I'm not sure if Carlton Carrington will have a great impact in terms of stressing defenses out. I think he could be very good at making tough jumpers, but I do wonder if he's going to be able to sucker in defense enough to open up those passing windows and lanes. Again, that's maybe more of a fantasy concern, but it's a bit of an on-court concern as well. It's a little bit of both. And I think that makes him one of the most interesting evals in this draft, actually. Getting a bit more macro here outside Carlton Carrington, where I think he could actually be one of the best self-created shot makers in this draft, but I'm not sure if it's going to be at a point or at a level where you want him having all this on-ball usage. I mean, I'm going to draw a comparison now to a different player in Tyler Herro, who is decent at his shot making, at his volume, which is beneficial, but it's only beneficial to a certain point, and it's not someone who you're maybe confident in handling all that usage or handing the keys to the offense to. And I think we could see that with Carlton Carrington, which, again, in this draft is still a very good outcome for him, and I think would be a very good outcome for a lot of players. It's just, where is that ultimately getting you? And again, that probably sounds like a bit of a negative. It's not as negative as you think. I think there is a lot of value in that sort of player. But that's kind of, it's a fine line, right? If you are even a little below that shot-making level, then suddenly you're more of a bench rotation guard rather than a okay, passable starter. And I think Carlton Carrington will toe that line a little bit. Again, I think he has good passing chops on the offensive end, but not outstanding passing chops. And I'm not sure if his off-ball game is going to be great enough to be a huge value add. So I think a lot of his future evaluation and where he goes in development will be reliant on if he's good enough at the shot making. But I think it's very close and hard to say if it's going to be above that line or below that line. Okay, let's touch on his defense some on Carlton Carrington here. I think his defense was decent and can be a part of his scheme. I thought he stayed with his man off ball fairly well, and that improved over the course of the season. He did have some mental lapses here and there, but I thought he generally knew where to go in rotations and can be a part of a defensive scheme, if not a hugely impactful player there. I thought he did a decent job of staying stout and square in isolation, but it does need to add some weight and strength just to hold his ground better. And again, he'll be entering the league a little below 19. He'll have time to develop that in the right NBA program. But the worrying thing for fantasy on defense is that he's just not a defense event creator at all. I mean, talked about Jared McCain having a 2% steal rate and not being encouraged by that. Carlton Carrington has a 1% steal rate and a 0.9% block rate. That's only 0.75 steals per 75 possessions. I'm not going to mention the blocks. It was pretty much non-existent as well. So you're not looking at a player who's really going to chip in many blocks or steals at all. And I thought generally he doesn't have this great quickness or agility, which affects him on both offensive and defense. I don't think he's going to beat defenders off the dribble too much, didn't really get around the edge of them and cut into the lane. And we touched on that earlier with his a lack of paint penetration. And on defense, he doesn't have the greatest lateral mobility. Again, it's not bad. I think he generally stays with his man, but it's not going to be elite in that regard. In transition, I think Carrington does push the ball ahead well in transition and look for those hit-aheads, which just pushes the pace of your offense and allows you those little extra buckets to help your offensive rating. So I think he'll be a little bit of a factor there as well. So let's get into the summary of Carlton Carrington here. I think Carrington has the traits of a three-level scorer, maybe not as much as the rim finishing, but at his age, that's quite a boon. His ability to pull up confidently and fluidly is not often found, and I think is one of the most important skills in the NBA today. That being said, I do question if Carrington will bend the defenses to him. But if his scoring and self-creation in that pull-up game is able to be strong enough, then that should bend defenses enough where it can open up those passing lanes, and we can just see him accumulate good points, good threes, good assists for his team with strong usage. I think in that regard, Carrington brings some fairly steady guard play and reliable passing, although I don't see that breaking defenses, and I don't see him collapsing defenses too much with that handle of vision. It's going to be reliant on that shot making with the pull-up game. Defensively, Carrington can play within a scheme fine, but I don't think he's going to provide much more than that. So overall, Carrington will need to pair results and that some improved efficiency with his scouting flashes to hit his ceiling, but the player archetype of an isolation self-scorer is rare and could buoy a decent offense someday if that all-around game can develop a little further and he's able to get across that line as a self-scoring player. So for fantasy, this makes him a little bit of a usage boom bust based on those minutes. I don't think he has a great profile otherwise, but let's discuss it a little here. I think Carrington will be decent in points, probably a little bit better in threes. I think his field goal percentage will be probably on the lower end due to the non-ideal shot diet, with it being a little more slanted to threes and a lack of rim attempts. I think he'll have a good free throw percentage, if not too impactful based on the attempts per game. Shot about a little under three attempts per game at 78.5%, so not great percentage, but can help you there a little bit. I think he'll give you some assists, as mentioned earlier, some rebounds as well. Talking about his rebounding a little bit here, I didn't really care for his lack of rebounding technique. I thought he didn't really get a body on a man too often, but he still got a decent amount of boards. He got almost actually 9 boards per 75 possessions for a 16.8% defensive rebounding rate, which kind of lights up my eyes a little bit. That was actually better than Jared McCain, who I noted his rebounding was a plus. So at the end of the day, Carrington is getting boards, and that's what we care about for fantasy. For his player type, I think Carlton Carrington will have good turnovers in the sense I don't think he's going to hurt you too much in that regard, but he's not going to give you steals and blocks. So at the end of the day, I actually like Carrington as a gamble in this draft for the sort of on-ball player he could be. That being said, for fantasy, it's probably not the highest upside, but if he does see that on-ball usage in minutes, then that's going to be good, and I think he could then, give you some points, some threes, some assists and boards, and those are always stats in one package that are pretty beneficial for a team. So he's someone who I'm willing to probably bet on in these Dynasty rookie drafts in late lottery, just because I could see a pathway where he develops and hits a high-end outcome, and then he's a pretty, maybe a 50 to 75-ish range Dynasty player for a good amount of time. So I can see that in the cards for Carlton Carrington as a higher upside outcome for him. That will do it for this episode of the Pun Intended Podcast. As a reminder, please, wherever podcast platform you're listening to, subscribe, like, rate, review. All that will be much appreciated and, again, helps the growth of this podcast. In the next few weeks, we'll continue wrapping up our Dynasty deep dives on these prospects. We're going to be going through about 2 more weeks here, and then by that time, we'll be at the draft, and we'll have some instant reactions on the pod. We'll have some written material with full rookie rankings for the top 60 players in this draft. So be on the lookout for that, and you'll be able to get access to that and the full 60 with a Sports Ethos NBA Fantasy Pass subscription, where you'll get access to our season wraps. We're doing a redraft recaps of season. We're doing our Dynasty series, reviewing all 30 teams and every player on the rosters, even down the two ways. So you'll get a very, you know, good blurbs and very detailed outlooks there, along with those updated rookie rankings. So make sure you look into the NBA Fantasy Pass over at sportsethos.com. With that said, keep up with your draft scouting, and we'll see you next time.